Colonel Mason, Reel 6. If I could run through some of these questions now. Before you reached the Western Front, what did you think the war there was going to be like?
When war broke out, we thought it would be open warfare, which we trained for. There was no mention of a trench. But even when we got to France, the trenches hadn't been constructed. So we thought it'd be open warfare still. But of course, as the war bogged down and one had to dig for cover with the shelling, the trench warfare developed and came to stalemate.
Did you
That happened, of course, in the First Battle of Ypres.
Yes.
Yes.
Did you expect some of the sort of inconveniences, like lice and rats and so on, that became such a feature of trench warfare, or weren't you in the trenches long enough to encounter those?
Yes. When we're in the trenches, of course, we took over the trenches from the infantry, and we took over their discomforts as well, and their comforts. But we weren't in there long enough to be inconvenienced too much by mud or by rats, because we were there long enough to get lice. We got lice, of course, and even when we went in the trenches.
Not from the billets?
From the inability to get your washing changed, that kind of thing.
Oh, I see.
But that was in the first Battle of Ypres, the first 3 months. Mm-hmm. After that, of course, they organised laundries and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we got changes. Yes.
Had there been any suggestion that this might be the sort of thing that happens during a war? Before, had you as a young soldier, yes, heard old soldiers talking about these, yes, sort of things?
That's right. No, of course, in previous wars, of course, they'd all been fluid, fluid. You could was a movement, but once the trench war became established, then the horses became fixed, and the mud became fixed because you couldn't get any further. You know? Mud, when in actual, when you were in action, was a nuisance. And it was expensive in as much as it affected the horse's condition and affected the saddlery and in that way. And of course, it wasn't pleasant.
Apart from the fact that obviously, cavalry are not trained for trench warfare because they're cavalry. Mm-hmm. Apart from that, you must have been called upon to undertake lots of tasks and jobs and so on. Did you find that your pre-war training was adequate for all these other tasks that you were called upon to perform?
Yes, even for the... our training, of course, as you know, would make us fit and make us adaptable. Mm. And the soldier was able to adapt himself to the changed circumstances, even to the trench warfare. We coped with everything, all the changes that came along.
And you had adequate equipment for any
yes
jobs
we
you had to do.
We went to war with rifles and swords, and we finished the war with rifles and swords, and of course the lancers had their lancers too. That's the one thing, our main asset was that we this rapid fire, which we had trained so hard at before the war. Rapid fire saved us our lives. 15-round rapid in a minute. Got us from getting off. But we were glad to do it, and of course it came in very handy. Because we were short of machine guns. Yeah, the Germans have more machine guns than we have. And that's the one thing which we were sore about.
Were there any particular operations or activities for which you weren't properly equipped or trained? Apart from... Or did you feel you could cope with...
We felt we could cope with everything.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, you know, we thought we could do as well as the infantry. I don't suppose we could, really, but anyway, we had that impression, which is helpful.
Yeah. What was your overall impression of life on the Western Front?
The impression was that we'd win in the end. It just had to be stuck out.
Yeah. There was no suggestion that the Germans might win?
No, none at all.
Or did you ever hear anybody saying, oh, I don't care who wins, as long as it's over?
No, I can't think I did. No, I don't remember anybody ever saying that. No, we were, attuned to it, and we realised we had to get on with it, and put up with whatever came along, and that was the, and we did it. Yes. Knowing that in the end, we would win in the end.
What was the relationship between officers and men?
Very good indeed. What helped us, of course, was that we had complete faith in our officers, complete faith. We had our own colonel, had been made a brigadier, yes. The colonel before him was a division commander, Sir John Vaughan, Major General Sir John Vaughan. Our colonel, 10th Hussar colonel before him, was McMurrock Cavanna, who was the cavalry corps commander, and the colonel before him, who was the Honourable Sir Julian Bing, was an army commander. Mm-hmm. So I suppose we were favoured that way. We thought that, with those kind of officers, we're safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's no need to bother about officers at all.
Did they make a special point of visiting you when possible or inspecting you? Did you feel the 10th Hussars were possibly their favourite regiment?
Of course, the officers had to... One thing I want to say, the officers had to stick the same conditions the men did.
Mm-hmm.
Same conditions, the same food... sleep the same. They had their whereas the trooper had his blanket, the officer had his valise, but that was any difference. And having to both have the same conditions, fighting on the same conditions, they were understandable of each other. There was nothing of any sort of he's better off than I am. Right? We all do the same job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were there any differences in attitude between the regular soldiers, and presume that you would have had some volunteers or territorials or even conscripts to fill up casualties. Could you tell by the end of the war any difference between these people?
We were fortunate, of course, inasmuch as our replacements in the first half of the war were our own men who served in the regiments and came back. Towards the end of the war, there were a few men of lesser service, but we never felt any rivalry or no feeling of superiority, that kind of thing. They all came in and absorbed and learned to do the same job in the same style, with the same amount of efficiency. Yes. It was after the war that thing started. Yes. After the war, when demobilisation came, and all the men, 80% of the men, of course, had to go away, and replaced then by conscription. That followed 3 or 4 difficult years, so we got that sorted out. But after the end of the war, no difference at all. No, they're quite away.
Were there any kinds of activities or operations which, at the time, you felt critical of?
Yes, we did feel that that some of the big organized attacks when they ran into bad weather, that we felt they should have stopped instead of carrying on and getting hundreds and thousands of, thousands of casualties just because of mud and wet and the inability to get forward and being bogged down. Now we thought, perhaps my own personal thought, but when a situation got like that, that the thing should be called off. But they went forward, as you know, and there were, the casualties mounted up, and nobody got any further forward. Of course, the Germans lost, same as we did on the Gatwick, but they were on the defensive. And they were better off. They just had to stand still, whereas our men had to go through the mud and the rain and that kind of thing, and were handicapped by it, which we thought was all silly. See, if you take the what you call the last battle, not the Battle of Passchendaele. How terrible that was. That was one sea of mud. We weren't in it, of course, we were in reserve. But that's what happened. I suppose the general staff had to take notice of our allies, what was happening on the other fronts, and just had to keep fighting to keep the Germans occupied. So they wouldn't go and, for instance, transfer a couple of hundred thousand troops to another front because we were inactive. That was the reason. Yes.
Did you have much to do with the French and the civilians or their forces?
Of course, we didn't come much into contact with the French army. And up until the last big battle in 1918. But then it was only on the flank. We happened to be on the flank, but they were all right. I think they fought very well. As regards the civilian population, of course, that was a bit of a mixture, of course. That depended upon the person's makeup. There were some farmers who were cooperative to do anything for us, and of course there were other people who say, well, that project you using the pump for water, thinking it might run out. Yes. Or disturbing their barns too much for shelter. But on the whole, that was nothing to worry about. Yes. Didn't bother us. We just accepted that. Yes. It was just human nature.
What did you think about the German forces?
We thought they were tough. They were good fighters. Very tough. And that we'd it'd be a tough job to beat them. Yes. And of course, that was relief, was until, of course, the Americans came in. Once the Americans came in, of course, we thought, well, that's just the help we need. Now it's only a matter of time. Which it was. It was that occasion that I told you, and I mentioned that about the battle of the last German attack, Bigger Jack, when they broke through on the Fifth Army, the junction between us and the French. I was wardroom sergeant then, in the wardroom, and the GHQ communiques used to come through, telling us what was happening, sort of thing. And this one was about 5 or 6 days before the big attack, 21st of March, and it said that they'd captured a prisoner who had said that there was a big attack coming, which I think our people knew of that, but they just didn't know where or in what strength. And he said this big attack was coming, and he says, I don't mind telling him, he says, why did it come? He says, it'll come on the 21st of March, he says. That's the day, saying that. He says, I'll tell you, because you can't stop us. But he wouldn't divulge any information about the regiments or the strength, that's all. That's all, he just gave him a broad sense that, all right, he says, it'll come, he says, and you won't stop us. It'll be so big. But of course we didn't stop it. We had a hell of a job. Yes. And it happened on the first day, on the 21st of March. I know, I was laying there in my blanket in the hut, and 4 o'clock, bang, overcame the first start of the cannonade and the barrage. And that kept up for about 2 hours before all the infantry came over. And the attack developed, of course, as you know, it's history. They nearly got through. But we were like, well then, standing to from that moment, that we pushed forward to wherever we wanted. We made a cavalry charge. Mm.
Oh.
You read about that?
No.
Oh, yes. Our brigade.
Yes.
It was on a composite force of about, I think about 300 men, under the command of one of our officers, Major Watkin Williams. And they were, the Germans broke through, and we were sent up to this I wasn't with them, but this composite squadron was sent up to stop them. And they got some open ground, and they were made a charge. And it was successful. They put their sword through quite a lot of Germans and captured a lot more and saved the position, yes, pushed the Germans back. It was only about two or three cavalry charges in the whole war. That was one. But I think the 16th Lancers was it, another one at the beginning of the war. That was when it was Stuart. Mm-hmm. But we weren't there then. Not that we would have done the same as the 16th. But it was... that's just a cavalry charge.